It's Wendy Snyder here in for John Hansen. It is Your Money Matters. And let's say hello to our first guest for tonight. This is Allie Kelly, economy reporter at Business Insider. Hi, Allie. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I need to have you. I look at Business Insider a lot. I am not very good with my money. John is so great. And I know that there's a story that we were going to talk about. You talked to some participants of Basic Income, and you talked to them years apart. Allie, can I be honest with you? I don't even know what basic income is. Can you explain?
Yes. So basic income has become a really popular potential poverty solution in a lot of U.S. cities, particularly around housing. And it's been tried over 100 times in the U.S. And the way it works is that philanthropists or local governments will give a group of low-income households a particular amount of cash each month. Sometimes it's $500, sometimes it's $1,000, and that cash has no strings attached. So these households can spend that money however they see fit. They can use it on a car repair. They can use it on medical bills. They can use it on childcare versus, you know, the traditional social safety net programs like SNAP or Medicaid, that those are going to be restricted to very specific categories like food and healthcare. Basic income allows these households a lot more freedom of spending.
How long has this been going on?
It's been going on for a long time, but largely we saw a boost of this kind of around the pandemic, where we had this wave of unemployment, and a lot of people's financial circumstances really changed. And the way that a group of nonprofits in a lot of cities, Denver, Boston, Durham, New York City has done it, Chicago has done it, Atlanta, a lot of the way that these cities kind of worked out how to support individuals that are food insecure or housing insecure was through these basic income programs. They absolutely still exist. And I had the opportunity to speak to these participants around the time that they were participating in these programs a few years ago and, you know, what their financial situations are like right now.
All right. Well, this article is great. Why don't you give us a little synopsis of how they benefited? How long was the time period between when you spoke to them and when they started this?
Right. So I spoke with them generally kind of between 2 and 4 years after their programs had ended. And these basic income programs, they don't get this cash forever. This cash is a monthly payment that these households receive typically for 1 to 3 years, and then it stops. But for a lot of them, I talked to a woman who, you know, was able to quit her part-time retail jobs and get the training and certification she needed for a really stable full-time teaching job. And I had kind of left her situation there a couple of years ago. And then I talked to her this summer, and she's still teaching and she loves it and she's supporting her 3 college age kids. But she did end up going back for a part-time job at Nike selling sneakers in the evenings because she felt like while that basic income program allowed her, you know, the freedom and the, you know, just financial ability to pay her bills and get that support that she needed to get that full-time teaching certification, and it's a job that she loves, that part-time Nike job right now kind of took the place of the basic income, where she still feels like in order to raise her family and afford everything that she and her kids need, she needs an extra boost every week on top of her full-time job. And that's a lot of time to work. So I think I heard this from a lot of the participants I talked to, is that these cash payments, this basic income program, really helped them find housing and secure a better job and all of that kind of stuff in the moment when they were going through a really hard time, as can happen to anyone. And
there are a lot of people out here now, yeah. Allie, that, you know, have a full-time job, but then they work part-time just to get some extra spending money. That's so common.
Of course, of course. And I mean, we've seen food prices in U.S. cities go up about 25% in the last 5 years. So it's exceptionally common. And I think that while this program was so helpful at moving these individuals' lives forward, it's not a kind of perfect solution and cure all for financial stress. That's something that I think is so common for so many Americans right now. But you know, it is a policy that has been really successful at helping lower income families kind of move beyond a hard time and be able to get to a place where they're not immediately worried about making ends meet every month. Even if, you know, they're still worried about long-term savings or paying off debt or something like that.
Yeah, and it's like a stepping stone. It's a little cushion. It allowed this first participant to go get her teaching degree. I think that's fabulous. We mentioned at the start of the show that JPMorgan Chase is going to invest $750 billion to boost the U.S. housing supply to help first-time home buyers. There are some challenges to U.S. homeowners now. Can you give us a few of them?
Absolutely. So, yes, we're seeing this giant investment from JP Morgan, and there's actually been a lot of movement in U.S. housing policy and U.S. housing investment in the last month. We had this big national bipartisan bill that has become law, and it addresses a lot of different housing concerns, supply and demand, zoning restrictions that make it harder to build apartment buildings. We're kind of doing away with some of that at the national level. Support for households that are impacted by climate change, stuff like that. In addition to, we're seeing, you know, big funders like JP Morgan that are helping both build affordable housing and help boost, you know, first-time homebuyers' ability to buy a home. And while all of that is such, you know, great news for a lot of Americans that are worried about housing stability or just worried, like, if they're going to be able to afford to move, or seniors that might be worried about being able to afford downsizing. You know, there's so many factors where building more housing increases supply, and that's great to meet demand. But we're also seeing the Harvard Joint Housing Studies Program at Harvard put out a report recently that one of the problems that the American housing market is facing right now is that a lot of expensive homes are sitting vacant, whether that's apartments or single family homes. And there isn't enough supply of affordable housing. And yeah. So, right. So, and that's happening in so many cities. And so I think that, you know, we're seeing at the national level, some of these policy changes and some of this investment, like you said, from JP Morgan, could potentially help build more affordable housing that people need.
Yeah, Cook County got their new assessment bills, and it's like a good news, bad news thing. Oh, yeah, your home's worth more money, but property tax is going up as well. So appeal time is quickly approaching the deadline. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Thank you for sharing all this. If you'd like to read what Allie Kelly has written, you can go to businessinsider.com. Allie, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Allie Kelly is the economy reporter at Business Insider. I'm telling you, just filling in for John Hansen, I feel like I'm getting smarter.